हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे,
हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे,
हरे राम
हरे राम 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 हरे हरे,
हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे हरे,
हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम हरे राम 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 हरे,
जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद,
जय प्रभुपद 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 जय प्रभुपद,
जय प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद प्रभुपद जय प्रभुपद,
जय प्रभुपद प्रभुपद
हरि नाम संकीर्तन की
जय।
हरे कृष्ण
हरे कृष्ण हरे कृष्ण, नमः ओम विष्णु पदाय कृष्ण प्रस्थाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्ति विनंत स्वामिनी च नमः, नमस्ते सरस्वती देवी गौरवाणी प्रचारणे निवसे सून्यवादी पुष्कत्य देने, ओम ज्ञानचमिनंद जन जन सलकया चक्षु सुमित जैन तस्म श्री गुरव नम श्रीते चन्य मनोभीस्तम स्थापित जैन बुटले सायं रूपकदमयं ददति सह पदान्तिकम् वंशकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभ्यैः च पतितनं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। This evening I would like to speak or to begin a three-part series. It's called, does anyone remember the name? One Story, Four Truths, which doesn't tell anything about what the subject is. But there's a second part also. Hare Krishna. There's a second part of the title also, which explains that using the wisdom of the Srimad Bhagavatam, the ancient wisdom of the Bhagavatam, to guide us through the difficult times in our life. Now, there are so many books written about how to deal with the difficulties of life, but the Bhagavatam is the most important because not only does it help us deal with the difficulties, but it helps us deal with them in such a way that our purpose in life to develop love for Krishna will be developed. Now, this particular pastime that I would like to speak of is one that I've spoken about quite a few times, and even I think you were there when I spoke about it in Wada, the time before it was the Govanant Echo Village, even many, many years ago. It's a story of Narada Muni, and how, which is from the first canto of the Bhagavatam, and how he became such a great sage, carrying the Lord's bhakti-sakti. just, we can't imagine, of course, but carrying that Krishna's energy of devotion was what Narada Muni did. So how did he get into that position? His life teaches us. And this time when I'm making this presentation, I've simplified it, and we won't speak about too many specific verses in detail. But I've simplified it, this one story, into four truths. And these four truths, if we can apply them to our life, then we will certainly become carriers of bhakti shakti. The soul's position in this world is one of, we're tiny, we're insignificant, but covered by false ego, we think ourselves very big and very important and central in the world. But actually, we're only insignificant. That's all we could ever be, is insignificant. And because we're tiny and insignificant, we need a shelter. And because we're tatastha shakti, we're marginal, we either get sheltered by Krishna's maya shakti or Krishna's internal energy, his pleasure-giving energy. And when we get the shelter of Krishna's pleasure-giving energy, we gain the ability to give Krishna pleasure, which is our natural constitutional, natural position. And that makes us happy. Just like the example we always give is by feeding the mouth, all the parts of the body become nourished. So when we give Krishna pleasure, then we become pleased. We become satisfied. So this is the meditation of a devotee, actually. How can I give Krishna pleasure? When a devotee is very advanced, when he really has the shelter of Ladini Samvit Shakti, the internal energy, he doesn't have to meditate and think about it. It's just completely natural. Completely natural because of his love for Krishna. This is perfection. So how to raise our consciousness to the perfect level is taught by the great sage Narada Muni as he narrates his own life. Now, interestingly enough, that the beginning of this story, this pastime, starts with a difficulty. And although no one likes difficulties, no one goes around looking for difficulties and problems and distress, they follow us. They follow us whether we look for them or not. It's just part of being in this world. So here we're going to learn the art of turning a difficulty into a blessing. This is the art of living, actually. I saw this even in Srila Prabhupada's own life. And we see it in the Bhagavatam, but I saw it in Prabhupada's life. I won't mention details, really, but I saw that in 1969 or 70, there was some problem within his society, his young society in ISKCON, and there was something he really didn't like, and he couldn't sleep at night, practically speaking. Even Prabhupada was troubled by difficulties. But he was so fixed. He was so fixed in pleasing his Guru Maharaj that he was so expert, fixed, and the difficulties on one level didn't disturb them, him. And on another level, he turned them into blessings. Like Dhruva Maharaj, when he died, what does it say in the Bhagavatam in the fourth canto that he did? I heard someone say it. Who whoever would say it more loudly. What did Dhruva Maharaj do? Say it. Don't be shy.
He remembered his mother who
gave
him that path. And then he offered respects to the sages and then stepped on the...
Yes, there's the point. He stepped on the head of death as he boarded the Vaikuntha aeroplane and went to the spiritual world. That means he used death to get to Goloka Vrindavan or to Vaikuntha. He turned the most feared situation in material existence into the greatest blessing to go back to Godhead. And I saw Prabhupada when he was in this very difficult situation with his own young ISKCON society, when he couldn't even sleep. What did he do? He traveled to India, actually, with devotees, and he opened up the biggest preaching field in the world. He used the impetus of the difficulty, the energy that I want to do something, I want to shift something, I want to change something. Difficulties, pain gives us that, to do something very wonderful. And each and every one of us were products of that wonderful preaching that Prabhupada started there with the help of his young Western disciples. At that time, it's probably impossible for you to conceive of, but there was, I think, one or two devotees who were of Indian origin who were wearing Indian bodies at that time. Almost no one. So Prabhupada changed the difficulty into a blessing. He used it in Krishna's service. This is what the Bhagavatam will teach us through the life of Dhruva Maharaj. So if we could I don't think we quite need it yet, but that first one where he just says four truths. One story, four truths. And yes, there it is. There's most of our title over there. Okay, just press the space bar and then close it. Yeah, and then close. Yes, thank you. So the story of Narada Muni begins not in the first canto, but in canto 7. Just at the very end of canto 7, after the story of Prahlad Maharaj has been told and after how Vanashrama helps us achieve devotional service as explained by Narada Muni to Yudhisthira Maharaj. Then this little pastime in just a few verses begins. Well, the great pastime begins with just a few verses. Narada Muni tells of his life, but not this life, but a previous life. And he says, long ago, long, long ago, in another Mahakalpa and another millennium of Lord Brahma's, I existed as the Gandhava known as Upabharana. And I was very respected by the other Gandhavas. Gandhavas are famous for what? Their singing, the sweetest of singing. And he was a Gandhava and he was well respected. I had a beautiful face and a pleasing, attractive bodily structure. He was beautiful, he was strong, he was well built, and decorated with flower garlands and chandan. So he was already beautiful, and he decorated himself in a wonderful way. He was strong. So decorated in this way, I was most pleasing to the women of my city. And thus, I was bewildered, always feeling lusty desires. So this is the background of who Narada Muni was in his previous life. So on one level, he was blessed. On another level, that blessing became a curse and the cause of difficulty for him. Why? Listen. Once there was a Sankirtan festival to glorify the Supreme Lord, and the exact words is Hari Kata Upagayane. So it was all about Hari Kata. Directly it says it here. A Sankirtan festival, Prabhupada translates it that, but it's an occasion for Hari Kata. Hari Kata Upagayane, for singing the glories of Lord Hari, of the Supreme Lord. And there was Upabharana. He was invited to this festival for kirtan. He was beautiful. He was dressed beautifully. But he had this tendency. And what was that tendency? We shall soon hear. Being invited to that festival, I also joined. And surrounded by women, I began musically singing the glories of the devatas, not Hari, but of the devatas. And because of this, the Prajapatis, the great demigods in charge of the affairs of the universe, they forcefully cursed me. Why did they curse him? Why were they so upset with him? The reason is that he had a gift. He had a blessing. He had an opulence. And what did he do with that opulence? And what is the what are opulences and gifts meant for? Who is the giver of the gifts that we have? Did Narada Muni create his beauty? He takes his birth as we take our birth, and suddenly our body develops, and suddenly we have abilities, we have things that we can do, we have things that we can't do. There are things that we do more excellently than anyone else. There are things we can't do at all. But the gifts are given by Krishna, actually. He is the Upadrastana Mantacha, Bharta. He is the Bharta. He is the master. He is the Bhokta. He is the enjoyer. So we get gifts. And here's how it's completely parallel to all of our situations, because we too have our gifts. There's one comment by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur in the 10th canto, I can't remember exactly where he says that every living entity, every individual has a speciality, has a special thing. That's what it means to be an individual, something unique to you alone that no one else has. And that speciality, that uniqueness, is meant to be offered to Krishna. That blessing of our individuality is meant to be given to Krishna, to give Krishna pleasure. It's more or less like if you go to the Yamuna River or the Ganga, you see the devotees as they bathe in these holy waters, they go like this. They face upward in the river where the river flows from, and they very sincerely take one palmful of water and they offer it to the Ganga or the Yamuna herself. So Krishna is the ocean of gifts and qualities, the ocean of beauty. And yet, when we have our gift, we are meant to use it for his pleasure. And Narada Muni wasn't in that mood yet. His mood was Upabharana, the Gandhava. And his mood was to surround himself because of his beauty, because of his strength and decoration, to surround himself with beautiful ladies and feel their affection coming to him. And that increased his desires to enjoy. He used his gifts for himself. And what is the result of that?
The Prajapatis.
At this festival, which was specifically meant to glorify Lord Hari, they became very upset and they cursed him. And they said, because you have committed an offense, and basically this is everyone's situation in this world, we have used our opulence, our situation, as if they're meant for me, and the result is we're cursed. And the curse is we come to the material world and we try to enjoy ourselves. And we will lose those opulences. And we never quite gain the ability to enjoy ourselves. It's always just over here. If I just do this, if I just push this out of the way, if I pull this a little closer, then I'll have the enjoyment that I so deeply long for. But it never happens. So Narada Muni was cursed because he committed an offense in an occasion, in an opportunity to use his beauty, his glorious voice to glorify Krishna. He felt himself the center, and therefore he was cursed to immediately lose his opulence and become a Shudra, and you will be devoid. You will lose all your beauty. You will lose your beauty. You will lose your opulence. You will be bereft of wealth. Go immediately. So, inside this curse, which no one would want to happen to them, to ourselves, there's a blessing. And we shall hear about that blessing in just a moment. But first, let's just look at what's inside the mood that causes us to take whatever gifts that we have, whatever opulences we have, and think that I am the enjoyer of those opulences instead of offering them to the Supreme Lord. In the consciousness of every conditioned soul, everyone in this world, there is a spirit of, one could say, envy or enmity, where we want to turn our back on Krishna. Krishna bhule se jeev anadiya bahimu. We turn our back on Krishna. And in illusion, we try to place ourselves in the center. And instead of trying to give Krishna pleasure, we want to be the center of everyone giving us pleasure. So I want to make myself the recipient of pleasure. I want to enjoy. But the reality is, because we are tiny, because we are insignificant, we don't actually have the ability to enjoy, to be central. Krishna can talk to everyone at once. He can please everyone. And actually, I've seen this even with Krishna's representative, with Prabhupada. Sometimes he was giving a class, and there would be hundreds of people in the room. But everyone, practically speaking, felt that Prabhupada was speaking to them. Krishna can do this through his agent. He can do it directly when the cowherd boys were sitting in a circle, when they were taking their lunch before Brahma Vimohana Leela. Krishna was looking at everyone. Krishna was looking at everyone, and everyone was pleased by Krishna's glance. Can we do that? Can we look at everyone? If we look this way, we'll have our back towards the people over here. Krishna can please everyone. We can never be sensual. Now, what causes a tiny, insignificant living entity to think or imagine himself the center. One could say it's envy. One could say it's false ego, a false understanding of who we are. Or one can say that it is pride. So every living entity in this world is proud. Every living entity who possesses a false ego has pride. Do you know who I am? I'll show you who I am. This kind of a mood. And therefore, of course, Mahaprabhu recommends Amanina Manadena to remove that pride. Be respectful to others and not demand respect for ourselves. And Raghunath Das Goswami in his Manasiksha, he says, Sadad Hitva Dhamba. First of all, we should remove our pride. And Sanatana Goswami, Srila Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita says that dainya or humility is the same as prema, love for Krishna. So as we associate with devotees, as we learn Krishna consciousness, we can even learn the art of appearing to be humble on the outside. We learn how to go like this, and we learn it. But we don't fool ourselves, and we certainly don't fool Krishna, and we don't really fool anyone else either. But we learn the art of external appearance. But what's really required is a deep transformation inside the heart. This is what's required. To the very core of who we think we are, we have to change. This is what Krishna consciousness requires. And we need to change to thinking of ourselves as not a master, not Ishwaraham Mahambogi, but as a servant. And who do we serve? We serve Krishna, but ultimately we serve everyone. Ultimately, this is all we can ever be, is servants. This is called Sanatana Dharma, and we all know this. So Narada Muni got a special blessing in his curse, and he lost everything. And what did he do? There, the story begins with his own narration let's go to the first truth. I'll speak about that a little bit. When we're in difficulty, we try to change everything and we try to shift things around. But it's nearly impossible to remove difficulties. Why? Because we don't know where they begin. Narada Muni's curse in his last life to lose all his opulence was affecting him in this life. And therefore, what we tend to do is in this life try to make an adjustment so I regain some opulence, so I become wealthy or something like that. But if the result could be, the cause of that could be last life or the life before that or the life before that or 1,000 lives before that. And we're just dealing with the surface of the situation superficially. And therefore, the root cause of our current suffering is difficult to discern and therefore complicated to dissolve. Our difficulties don't go away so easily. They change their form. So here's the first truth and the first lesson that I wanted to share with you. But the story goes on, the pastime of Narada Muni goes on, because he explains in the fifth chapter of the first canto, in the last millennium, I was born of the son of a certain maidservant engaged in the service of brahmanas who are following the principles of Vedanta. So he was a boy. He was poor. He was a servant's son. He had no wealth. And when the Brahmins were living together during the Chaturmasya, the 4 months of the rainy season, somehow this little boy of 5 years old was engaged in serving them. He was poor. He had no pride. He was the son of a maidservant. He had no pride. The curse had removed his pride. The cause of his pride was his gifts of singing, beauty, strength, being attractive to the opposite gender. But this was gone. And this boy had nothing. Nothing, meaning he didn't have a big false ego. Now, if we think about who we are, we know ourselves better than anyone else knows us. Even the people who are critical of us, we know ourselves and our strengths and weaknesses, and especially our weaknesses. We can cover them to others, but we can't really hide ourselves. So we tend to have the biggest delusion is self-delusion. So there's one story of one sadhu who was nearing the time for him to die, and he called together his students, and he told them something. He said, "When I pass from this world, I'm going to go before the judge who's going to, like Yamaraj, who's going to type in my record, the name in my name, and then my record comes up into the database, and he's going to say, 'Did you do this? Is it true that you did this?' And I'll say, 'Yes, I did do that, but here's why I did it. There's this reason and this reason and this reason and this reason, and I had no other choice. What else could I do?' And the judge will listen and go, 'Hmm. And how about this one?'" He pushes the down button. "And how about this thing? 'Yeah, I did do that, but there was a reason I did it. And he did this, and this was the circumstance, and this and this and this and this and this. What else could I do?" Next one. And one after the next, this is what the sadhu is saying, that he's pulling up my record. And for everything improper that I've done, I will have my reason. But then, the sadhu said, but then he will say to me, 'You know yourself better than anyone else. Why was it that you were so proud?' And then the sadhu said, and when he says this to me, I will not have any excuse. I will just hang my head down, confirmed by a sneeze in the back." Because we do know ourselves better than anyone else, and yet we're proud. And this is called false ego. But Narada Muni was quite different from this. He was humble. He was humbled by his circumstances. So the blessing in that curse was that he lost his pride. And in that, as a young boy, there were some sadhus, some bhaktivedantas who were there. And they were staying in one place during the rainy season, And this is the traditional system that during the Chaturmasi, it's not practical for the sadhus who keep on moving from place to place, traveling. It's not practical for them to travel, so they stay in one place and they follow very strictly rules and regulations, and they engage themselves in hearing and chanting, etc., and doing this and minimizing their physical needs. So when they're traveling, they don't have to follow these kind of rules and regulations. Because when you're in one place, and if you've ever lived in one place for a few years, you see that what do? You start accumulating everything, more and more things, and your room becomes so filled, and then your house becomes so filled, like that. But if you're traveling, either in India on an airplane with a 15 kilo limit, or imagine you have to carry everything on your back. And one devotee once told me that when he was a young boy, he had to leave. He was in the Ukraine and there was some war going on. And all the people in all the villages where the war was going on, they took all their valuables from their house and they just left and started going towards the west, which was towards the other parts of Europe. And they had everything that they valued that carried with them, which is natural. But when you have to carry things on your own back, they're very, very, very heavy. So he said that you'd see beautiful tables, old antiques. You'd see everything strewn on one side of the road and then the other side of the road of the path. And this is one of the glories of traveling continuously. You have to minimize what you take. Otherwise, you have to carry it on your back the whole time, and it's very tiring, and your back's going to get very sore. So that means you have to minimize what you take. It means you minimize what you think that you need. And this is the glory of a sadhu's life. Because it's not that the minimum needs cause us unhappiness. It's all our desires of the things that we think we need that cause us misery. And the advertising industry takes advantage of this. All the people who study psychology in the university, they don't get jobs as psychologists, they get jobs in the advertising industry, where they learn how to manipulate people's minds to buy things that they don't need. And I've experienced this, unfortunately, myself. But, you know, when you want to buy something, somehow the desire becomes in your mind to get something. I need this. And the desire becomes a passion. And I need it. And then you go and buy it. It's on sale and you buy it. And then you open it up and it's just another thing. The anticipation was all the pleasure, but the actual thing can't give us the pleasure. And I once looked at a book about, it was written by some, it was a tantric sadhu, but he was a sadhu. And he said, people can't understand the freedom of life, the freedom, the happiness that the freedom of detachment brings. Because at any time, you can just get up and go somewhere else. And where do you sleep? You just sleep somewhere. And then you move to this place, and your burden is very light. And you can move around detached. So he said that. Ordinary people can't understand the freedom and happiness of the sadhu who is detached experiences. So Narada Muni had that. Now he had that. So the sadhus, they're supposed to travel, continuously travel, because that minimizes your needs. And I there was one devotee I know who's passed away now. He was in the first VIHC session, and he really had this desire to study and learn. And he said, after 10 years, I'm going to go and preach after studying. But he had a capacity too. He studied after the VIHC. He kept on studying and studying and studying and studying and studying and studying. He could fluently speak Sanskrit. And then one day, and he just kept on studying, and the preaching never seemed to come. But one day, I saw him on the road. And he was just walking very peacefully with a little shoulder bag on his back. And I was in a taxi or a car of some sort. So I told him, I said, come on, come in, let's go. You don't have to walk. And he got in, and he was very, very, very happy. And he was so thankful. And I asked him what he was doing. He was so learned. He had studied Sadarshan, Sanskrit. He studied the Bhagavatam. He studied Jyotish. Everything he had studied. And he'd lived at the Brijbazis' houses, and he would learn this and learn that. So I asked him what he was doing and why was he walking on the road. And he was very gentle and humble. And he said, I wanted to test out if Krishna was going to really take care of me. So I just started wandering in Braj with nothing. And I saw I was always well fed, and I didn't carry anything with me. And then but this is the Braj culture, he said. Later, this was after a later conversation. This is the Braj culture. They know how to, they always will take care of sadhus who just travel. So he said, I wanted to test it further. So I went to South India, where the culture is a bit different. And he just wandered and wandered and wandered. And he told this to a friend who told me later. He said, here's the rule. When you're traveling like that, and he found himself always taken care of too. The rule is that you don't take anything that you don't 100% need right now. And even, and this was his example, even if someone offers you one box of matches, and you already have a box of matches that you are using and need, and even though you may only have a few left, but even if one offers you a small box of matches, if you don't need it right now, you don't take it. So he was quite wonderful, and he was, and what he learned, after all his learning, he learned to be very detached. And then at some point, at the top of his learning, he learned that this was after probably 20 years or maybe even 30 years, he learned that all I need to do is chant Krishna's names. So he would chant 2 lakhs over 120 rounds a day. And he would just chant and chant and chant. And then he became satisfied. And then he said, when he learned that all I need to do is chant Hare Krishna, and he was completely detached from everything else, then he decided it was time for me to preach. And the story has a happy ending, but a sad ending too. Because after going to his own country in South America for 2 months, after 2 or 3 or 4 months, he became very ill, and he had cancer, and he was fighting the cancer with all kinds of natural cures and this, but nothing was working. And then he had followers by this time, and the followers gathered around him and said, you know, there's no real reason for you to stay here if it's so difficult for you. So he said, okay. And then the next day he left. So there are many, many things I learned from the story of this wonderful devotee who I personally knew. And one of the things was, don't delay your preaching to the very end until you learn everything that you have to learn, because you don't know what's going to happen, in fact. Another thing I learned is, if you don't need a book of matches, box of matches, and someone offers it to you, don't take it. And another thing is that detachment is very, 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 very powerful, and that Krishna will take care. Krishna does take care. He will take care. And what will we gather around us that will protect us when we're really in a difficult circumstance, like we have cancer and it's time to die? What will we find in our house other than the Bhagavatams and our beads and our deities and the association of devotees that's going to protect us at this most difficult time? It's really that we should be detached from this world, and we all should move in that direction, because I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but I'll tell you, I never expected to be 73 years old. I thought I was going to remain 16 and then 21 and 30 and then 40 or 50, but I'll tell you that it doesn't work like that. And that means ultimately that one day, there's a famous saying by Steve Jobs. Everyone knows who Steve Jobs is, of course. You know? Yes. He said, if you live every day like it's going to be the last day of your life, one day you're going to be correct. I mean, we giggle. But it's actually not very funny, at least when you're 73 years old. It's not funny. It's very heavy. So what are we attached to? What should we remain attached to? Because we're going to have to discard each and every one of those things on the road of our life at some point or another. And then another most important point from this devotee's life was that he developed the end of all knowledge, and he developed attachment for the holy names and understood that really, really, this is what life's for, to get this attachment for Krishna in the form of the holy names, in the form of the Bhagavatam, in the form of Krishna Katan, the association of devotees, in the form of the holy Dham, in the form of the deities. We want to become attached to Krishna. And instead, we become attached to so many other things. It's in our own interest to develop attachment for Krishna, because that attachment is ours. It's ours forever. So Narada Muni was serving these traveling mendicants, these Bhaktivedantas, who had no material attachments because they were always traveling, and therefore during the Chaturmasya they followed specific rules. How strict the culture was. They followed specific rules when they were living in one place so that they wouldn't develop material attachments during those 4 months. So they were always engaged in Krishna Katha. That was the essence of their practices. And he, young Narada Muni, who was 5 years old only, innocently, poor son of a maidservant, was serving them. Now here's an interesting verse. Although they were impartial by nature, they're equal samaham, like Krishna, samaham, pandita samadarshana, they saw everyone equally. They were impartial by nature, but yet those followers of the Vedanta, they blessed me, Narada Muni tells, by their causeless mercy. So what, because this we find all the time that people say, please bless me, please bless me, please bless me. But here it comes again. How did Narada Muni act to attract their blessings? Narada Muni, he says, I was self-controlled. I had no attachment for sports, not even when there's an India versus Pakistan cricket match on. Even though I was a boy, I wasn't attached to these things. In addition, I was not naughty. I was not naughty, he said. And I did not speak more than required. So he had very, very gentle qualities. But he was just a boy. And because he had the tendency and mood to serve in this simple way, the simple way was to please another. He desired to please others because it's natural for a young boy until they're teenagers. He was simple, humble. He wanted to please others. And he pleased these great sages. And the result of that was they loved him extra. Their hearts opened to him. Their affection flowed to him. They gave him their causeless mercy. That means they were affectionate to him. And once only by their permission, I took the remnants of their food. He ate the Mahaprasadam from them once only by their permission. And all my sins, he said, were completely eradicated. And thus, as I was engaged in their service for this short time period of 4 months, I became purified in heart. By serving, we become purified in heart. By enjoying, our desires to enjoy just simply increase. Passion increases. And at that time, now please listen to this. And at that time, when he was purified at heart, by association, the very nature of these transcendentalists, the Bhaktivedantas, these sages, became attractive to him. Because everyone in this world, we have a taste, we desire to enjoy in different ways. And depending on who we associate with, we tend to develop a similar taste for enjoyment as those we associate with. So therefore, one of the prime rules or guidelines in Krishna consciousness is sadhu-sangha, and on the other side, a satsanga-tyag. So this taste, and Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he says that the bhakti-lata bija is ruchi, or a taste. And if we somehow get a taste for service, serving Krishna in Braj, serving Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan mission, serving the deities, it's the same taste, the holy names, it's a taste, it's a matter of a taste. If we get a taste for transcendence, by touching transcendence in the form of the devotees, in the form of the deities, in the form of kirtan, in the form of japa, if we can get a taste in the form of Bhagavad Gita, if our taste changes from trying to enjoy matter if we can somehow get that taste from Golokeda Premadana Harinama Sankirtana, that this taste descends into the material world in these, especially these forms of Panchanga Bhakti. The taste of what it's like in the spiritual world is available in the material world in the holy names, in the Krishna Katha from the sadhus. It's a different taste in Vrindavan, in Mayapur, in Puri. There's a different taste there. There's like a almost an invisible, subtle fragrance in the atmosphere in these holy places. And the deities, you stand in front of Sisi Radha Vrindavan Chandra, and if you can focus on the deities and your mobile phone is turned off, then it doesn't feel like you're in an ordinary, it's not like walking into a shopping mall. There's a different taste. And that taste, that drop of taste, even though we take it so cheaply in one sense, every day I chant my rounds, I talk to devotees, I listen to devotees, I hear Srimad Bhagavatam. But if we can just get the actual taste that these things have carried into the material world, they're not in the material world, but they carry into the material world, that taste is our wealth. And that taste is a seed that we have to ihan male nityasechi shravanadi jal, shravanadi. We water that seed, that taste, and it will grow into prema eventually. So that taste, he got that taste from the sadhus because they were merciful. And because his heart was somewhat pure, so their very nature became attractive to him. That's the taste. And once one has that taste, it is just a matter of time before it blossoms to the fulfillment of that seed, which is prema bhakti. So how Narada Muni journeyed from the curse of losing everything, his all material things due to his pride that he was misusing, how he journeyed through association with devotees, where he got the taste, the seed of bhakti, and how that blossomed ultimately into him being the carrier of bhakti shakti, the shakti of Krishna for bhakti, is the rest of the story, the pastime. And he led a life that by his example we should also follow. We can't imitate, but we should learn the principles. And we mentioned the first one over here, is that it's so difficult to change our distresses into happiness. We try so many things, but it's very difficult. But Narada Muni is going to teach a different way to deal with the stresses. He continues describing his own story. By the mercy of those great Vedantists, I could hear them describe the attractive activities of Lord Krishna. Tatra anvaham Krishna kata pragayatam. They were speaking about Krishna. And he heard that. Taste means the seed is of a desire. That's the seed. It may be very, very small and very, very faint in the beginning, but it's a desire that I want to go there. It may be so small and faint, but it is the seed that will grow into the fulfillment of prema. That desire is the most valuable thing. The desire to want to be with Krishna, to serve Krishna, is the most it is our wealth, and it should be protected, as Mahaprabhu describes to Rupa Goswami in in Rupa Shiksha, in that section of what it may be the 18th chapter of the of Chaitanya Charita. It is our wealth. We tend to take it for granted. But it is our real wealth. Our money wealth isn't our real wealth because we'll lose it. We want to invest it so it grows maybe, but we will lose it. But this is our real wealth, and we don't want to lose this real wealth, this desire, born of a different fragrance, a different taste from a different realm, a realm that has nothing to do with this material world, nothing to do with the pleasures of this world. It's a different category. So, their association, his part of service, them speaking Krishna Katha, he heard them describe the attractive activities of Krishna. And thus, listening attentively, my taste for hearing of the personality of Godhead increased at every step. He wanted to hear more and more and more and more. In fact, that tatra lolam api mulam ekalam, that greed to immerse ourselves in these items of transcendence. And this comes with service too. I know devotees who have the taste for book distribution like that. When you're preaching, you contact a different energy. It's the same thing. It's service, devotional service. And some days you have good days, some days you have bad days, but you're in the mood of service. You can do it in a fruitive mood, but if we do it especially in a mood of service, then we contact a different energy and there's sort of a different flow of life. But not only book distribution service, any service, cooking service, any service, hearing service, managing service, but it's done in a mood of service to please Krishna. So again, you're dealing with a different energy. And that's one of the reasons we're so against Mayavad philosophy, is because they say that Krishna's form and Krishna's service, they're all born of the modes of material nature. They say that devotional service is of the same quality. The hearing, the chanting, the seeing the deities, the devotees, all the things that give the sweetest of taste from that realm, they say it's born of the modes of material nature, and it's all Maya, and therefore they're called Mayavadis. And we say, no. Thank you. So his taste was growing. So thus, during the two seasons, the rainy season and autumn, had the opportunity to hear these great souls constantly chant the unadulterated pure glories of Lord Hari. They were constant at it because their taste had blossomed. And by association with them and hearing from them, his taste was blossoming too. I was very much attached to those sages. That's natural. I was gentle in behavior, and all my sins were eradicated. My desires shifted. I wanted that taste. I wanted that thing in their service. My sinful tendencies were removed. In my heart, I had strong faith in them. Look what they were giving him. I had controlled my senses and I was strictly following them. with body and mind. So his advancement was increasing. But as they were leaving, the 4 months of the rainy season passed day by day. As they were leaving, those Bhaktivedantas, because meeting and greeting and leaving are very important times. This is actually described in Nectar of Devotion, Bhaktivedanta Sindhu. So when they were leaving, these Bhaktivedantas, they wanted to give him a gift. And what did they have to give him? They had knowledge, spiritual knowledge. So while they was leaving, these Bhaktivedantas, who were very kind to poor-hearted souls, it's their very nature, compassion is their nature. They instructed me in that most confidential subject which is instructed by the personality of Godhead himself. So Srila Prabhupada's purport describes that knowledge in a wonderful way. But Srila Jiva Goswami, in his comment on this verse, he says the knowledge that they gave him was the Chatasloki Bhagavatam, the four verses that the Lord had instructed Brahma in the 9th chapter of the 2nd canto. They gave him, this young boy, the essence of the Bhagavatam in four verses. 1, 2, 3, 4. Now, we'll end this class by just describing these four verses in brief, very quickly, because there are huge commentaries on these verses and their meaning is really deep. But this is what the Bhagavatam is carrying. And our acharyas have described it, as I said, in lengthy commentaries. But I will describe it very, very, very briefly, because these four verses can be understood as knowledge, sambandhagyan, abhideya, and prayojana, but not in that order. Sambandha, prayojana, the goal, the necessity, the great necessity of life, and the means to get it. Now why? And this happens many times, but in the Chatasloki Bhagavatam, the order is, you would think it would be knowledge, and then the way to get the knowledge, and then the goal. But it's not presented that way, is because unless there's knowledge, and then there's the goal, and the goal is so sweet, unless we become attracted to the sweetness of the goal, we won't have the inspiration to do the abhideya tattva, or the practices that will bring us to that goal. So very often, it's presented in what we would say is out of order. Like in Jiva Goswami in the Sandarbhas, he has it's sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. But here, it's given in the Chatasloki Bhagavatam, it's given with the prayojana as the third verse, and the first two verses are sambandha, or knowledge of our relationship with Krishna, or knowledge. So, could you go to the other one? Yes. With the space, yes. So the first of the four verses is this one: Aham eva sameva gre nanyasat yat sadasat param paschadaham yadetascha yo visheshete sosmaham. So in this verse, the Lord tells Brahma, and the sages told Prahlad, not Prahlad, but they told young Narada Muni, what Krishna says, and we'll read the English, but I'll really summarize it in a very simple way, that Krishna says that before there was anything in material existence, I was there. And this material existence manifested, it's not different from me. It's expanded from me, and it's not different from me. And then the third phase of time is the annihilation. When this material existence vanishes, it's annihilated. It's me who's left. Is that clear? That's the first point on Sambandhagyan, that Krishna is eternally existing before the creation. He's existing in the spiritual world. He's existing. And then the material world is not different from him. It's expanded from him. And then when this creation is destroyed, as it must be destroyed, Krishna is left. Clear? Here is Srila Prabhupada's translation. Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead. Maybe someone else could read it very slowly and very clearly. Where's that microphone that we usually reserve for questions? Slowly, loudly, and clearly.
Brahma, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I.
So the material, the world that's expanded in front of us at this very moment, every single thing is not different from Krishna. It is not exactly Krishna, it's his energies, but it is him. It's Maya Shakti.
That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, yes, the personality of Godhead.
That's the first verse. Second verse. The rest of Sambandha. Vitam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chapmani tad vidyaratmanomayam yata basho yata tama. That if you have any vision of reality that's different from this, different from seeing that Krishna is present in everything. Krishna, the Supreme Person, is present in anything, in everything, in every situation. In every situation, in everything, ultimately there's nothing but Krishna. If you have any vision other than this, you should know that it is Maya, illusion. Because Krishna is connected to everything, every situation, every person, every place. If you see any in any other way, you should know that you're an illusion. And what you are doing, yata basho, yata tama, it is like seeing like this is like the reflection of something, an object, into darkness. So you may think that reflection is reality, but it's only a reflection of actual reality. So similarly, we may see something as if it is separate from Krishna, but it is not. It is Maya causing us to see the something that's not in existence, something separate from Krishna, as if it wasn't in existence. So the first verse explains how Krishna is everything and everywhere and everything in all phases of time. And the second explains that to see it in any other way is illusion. It's incorrect. It's wrong. It's Maya. And as soon as we see something separate from Krishna, we want to enjoy it. That's Maya. The English, please. Please read it.
O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it as my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness.
Next. Next. Third verse is the Prayojana verse. And this one is the most difficult to understand. Yatam hanti bhutani bhuteshu tesvatesanu pravastani apravastani mamateshu na tesvam. Go to the next, to the English. O Brahma, please read it slowly enough.
O Brahma, please know that the universal elements enter into the cosmos and at the same time do not enter into the cosmos. Similarly, I myself also exist within everything created and at the same time am outside of everything.
Now here's, with this verse having been explained by Srila Jiva Goswami, becomes so sweet as the Prayojana. That Krishna says I'm in everything. And the example he's given here is that the elements of existence, the elements like earth and water, they exist in my body. They exist in everything. They exist here, they exist here, they exist here, they exist here. There's earth, there's water, there's fire, there's air, there's ether. But they also exist outside. There's a great quantity of earth, there's a great quantity of air, there's a great quantity of water, there's a great quantity of fire that exists outside of every object. When you have, what do you need to see Krishna in everything, even though he's outside of everything too, but what do you need to see Krishna in everything? Just like the air is outside, he exists. The air exists outside, the water exists outside, but it's also in an object. So what do you need to see Krishna, who is outside of everything in Goloka Vrindavan? What do you need to see him everywhere, in every circumstance, in everything? Everywhere you look, what does it require? And the answer is Premanjana Turita Bhakti Valochinena. You have to have love. And if you have love for Krishna, you'll see him in everything and everywhere. You don't see anything as separate from him. That's Prayojana. That's the goal. And that's what Krishna's described here to Brahma. And the final one, final of the four verses. Etaradeva gigyaso tatva gigyasanapmanam anvayo vyatarek. Anvayo means, by the positive definition, vyatarek is the negative definition. Like I could say, if I define this, the color of my bead bag, positively I'll say it's white. And if I define it negatively, I'll say it's not black, it's not green, it's not purple, it's not spotted, it's not striped. So that's a definition in the negative, and the positive is what it is. So whether you define things, if you're looking for truth through positive methods, anvayo, or negative methods, neti, 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 as the gyanis do, I am not this, I am not that, you won't find any truth. This is what's to be found. These two verses, first and this second third Prayojana verse, this is what to be found by every method of finding knowledge, of discovering truth. It is this that is to be found, not anything else, nothing more, nothing less. It is this. That's Abhideya. The practice, the process is to look for Krishna in everything, to see him everywhere. Yomam pasyati sarvatra. Name? What's the last line? That for one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, he's never lost to me. I am never lost to him and he's never lost to me. This is knowledge. This is the purpose of knowledge. And there's nothing else. Read the English. Please.
A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this in all circumstances, in all space and time, and both directly and indirectly.
In all circumstances, all time, at every moment, whatever is happening, Krishna is there. And to see anything else is illusion, incorrect, it's Maya. That's the search for knowledge. That's the search. That's the methodology of the Absolute Truth. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? In everything. So these four verses were explained, according to Srila Jiva Goswami, to this boy who is pure of heart. And he had a taste for this. He had that taste. He was burning with the desire to find Krishna. Now, if you could change, Asapul, to the other, and we'll just see the other truth. Second of the four truths. Please read it, O reader of truths.
Life's challenges should be viewed through the lens of transcendental knowledge.
Because the subtitle of this presentation was, how to use this wisdom of the Bhagavatam, apply it to our life. And how to use it when difficulties present themselves to us in life. How to use this wisdom, apply it. So we need knowledge, transcendental knowledge. We get that transcendental knowledge, and then we must learn to see life through this lens. When I say we must, I don't mean we don't have a choice, but the knowledge should so deeply settle into our consciousness that it affects how we view life in reality. But then the real challenge comes. And as our Radha Sam Prabhu mentioned yesterday, when he was summarizing our japa, he said, knowledge itself isn't the goal. The real test is, can I apply it to my life? And therein lies the greatest challenge. But unless we have knowledge, we don't know what to apply to our life. So we need knowledge through association. We want a taste for that, because it's no different from Krishna, this transcendental knowledge. And we want to search for it. And we want to apply this process to our life. So Narada has gotten knowledge, but we've already heard that the sages are leaving. What happens next, we shall discuss tomorrow. And there will be two more truths. Okay, thank you very much. Let me just see what time it is. If anyone has any real 3 minutes worth of questions we have, but I'm not going to go beyond 9 o'clock. But yes, Prabhu. Can you imagine there was a time that people could ask questions without a microphone in their hand? It's not as practical, but...
Thank you very much, Prabhuji. The first chapter of Narad Muni's previous life, so that ends where he was cursed, and then we see that he was born in a Shudra family.
He lost everything.
He lost everything and he is born in a Shudra family. And then when we see the mention of the qualities of Narad Muni, which, you know, he was, as a child, he was not very sportive and those kind of things. And then you mentioned that because he was... So I just wanted to understand that what happened, that how could, you know, he had so much pride. So after he was cursed and now, so what was the transformation? How could a person...
What was he proud of?
He was a very sweet singer and he was
very beautiful. He was very strong. He had the people respected him. He could dress himself in a wonderful way. And he lost each and every one of those things. And you can be sure, that as we grow old, all the things that we are proud of, we will lose. Prabhupada said that an old man cannot be proud, even though we may try our best. Because all the things that we are proud of, they're not us, nor are they ours. They're external to us. I remember recently sitting in a dentist's chair after he pulled out a tooth and looking at it and saying, well, that's not me, because I'm still here and the tooth is out here. So it's like that. My beautiful hair, kaha. When I was a teenager, I remember just standing in front of a mirror for so long, trying to make my curly hair straight or blonde like a friend of mine had, and it just was to no avail, and I tried so hard. So all the things, whether it's our beauty, our strength, when I was young, I could run all day long practically and not get tired. Now I can't even walk practically. I was so proud of that. Really. Now it's gone. So we, our whatever beauty, whatever intelligence, the mind working really fast, so many different things, we will lose them one by one. Our strength, the mind, when you're old, your mind doesn't work the way it does when you're young. So what am I proud of? What is it that I have that makes me think that I'm better than others? I mean, I'm not asking you to raise your hand and we'll pass around the microphone and everyone will reveal that. But what is it? We'll lose it in time. The wealth we'll leave behind, the intelligence, the family, Dhanmaishwarya, Sweetishwarya, it's not us. It's like my tooth. It's not me. So the basic things that Narada in his previous birth was proud of, his influence, his respect, his beauty, his strength, that everyone was attracted to him, the beautiful ladies in the town were attracted to him, was gone. He was a beggar, practically. He didn't even know who his father was. Did that answer your question?
So, Guruji, in that case, there might be some chances that, you know, one might become atheist if someone has a very big ego, and we see also. So what I wanted to ask you...
But they don't become atheists. It's funny. They're angry at God for making him, not giving them a good birth and a good situation. So is that atheist if they're angry at God? What do you think?
No. I mean, they still believe
yes,
in God.
Yes, but look at Narada Muni, how he see, we can transfer our difficult situation, and we all have the freedom to do this, into a worse situation. We can become angry at God. We can become angry at everyone, envious of anyone who has more than we have. You know, envious, we can become Naxalites, you know, envious of everyone who has any wealth or position. We can do that, but we don't need to learn how to do that. That comes quite naturally. But what we need to learn from Narada Muni is how to transform his difficult situation into the greatest blessing. And the beginning of that story has begun. That's what we want to learn. To know that Krishna is there in the difficulty too. Now, how to find him? That's Abhideya Tattva. And we'll discuss Tateyanu Kampamsu Samikshamanu tomorrow. That naturally comes up. How to find Krishna? Because knowledge means to know that Krishna is there in everything. Every situation, there's no situation he's not there. And to see otherwise is illusion. Now, how to apply that to life? That's what we need. But without knowledge, we won't have anything to apply. Is that okay, Paul? He could have become an atheist. So could you. So could I. Let us pray that we don't. Let us turn to Krishna in difficult circumstances or in good circumstances and not turn away from him. That takes full sincerity, doesn't it? Okay. Good night. Hare Krishna. So willing, we shall continue and hear two more truths. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Sri Narada Muni ki jai, Srila Prabhupada Bhaktivinoda ki jai.
Hare Krishna. So we have a book table of His Grace Guruji and Prabhu's books. Devotees can take benefit. Tomorrow's session will be between 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. Please note, tomorrow's session is 4:30 to 6:30 p.m. And for all the registered participants, prasadam is there in the Mukunda Hall. Hare Krishna.